available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner gonna try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome everyone back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we are the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Going to wrap up National Signing Day, at least the second one, the February Signing Day. It's now the secondary signing day. How the Pac-12 did. We already gave you detailed analysis of all the Pac-12 North teams with Brandon Huffman and Pac-12 South teams with Greg Biggins. And we're going to answer a bunch of your questions today, some other topics too. If you do have questions for us, send them in. We're going to keep the off-season train rolling. We're going to head into spring football, start covering some of those teams. But if you have any questions about your team, other teams, your rival, anything like that, Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is our email address. Or if you would like to call or text us, you can do that too. Leaving a voicemail or sending us a text, 424-532-0678 is the number. We do love when you tweet at us. You can do that at Pac-12podcast. And of course, our website, Pac-12podcast.com, where you can find all of the content created by us here at the Podcast of Champions. And if you're going on to iTunes or whatever podcasting app you have, please subscribe. Please rate us. Leave us a positive feedback. That's always appreciated. I haven't looked at any of our feedback lately, David. Hopefully it's good.
Yeah, we've gotten some new reviews. Ooh. Let me pull up a few. I think these were good ones. Let's see if there's been any new ones since I last checked. We have a 5-star review from White Lightning 69. Said, pretty good podcast. Well, first the subject line. The only Pac-12 podcast available. And then the review. Pretty good podcast. One of the hosts claims to know 100 words in the English language and sometimes teaches the other host some of those words. There's also pretty adequate jokes and some Pac-12 football analysis. Great.
I love that.
DCNLA with another 5-star review makes a painful conference list. I don't know. These guys are the perfect mix of humor and knowledge. They are clearly fans of the Pac-12, but also get the straight skinny on how each team will perform. Definitely not Herocious.
Herocious.
Yep, there you go. Bruin fan 8888. Slurp up them moist points. As a diehard Bruin fan, I never thought I would listen to a podcast with a Trojan host. However, I find myself tolerating, dare I say, enjoying Ryan's commentary. Jokes aside, Ryan and David's input on the Pac-12 is fantastic. Although they might not always predict the outcome correctly, a fact they unabashedly admit to, unlike other college football podcasts, I appreciate their insightful and humorous take on the Pac-12. Thank you both for all your hard work.
Ah, good stuff. So what I've learned from that, David, was one, just because we show up every week makes us the best because other people don't show up every week.
Existence is our main success.
And then two, we do when you see people, like there's a lot of podcasts, a lot of TV shows, they just make predictions all the time. And there's not that many that keep track of if you get them right or not. And there's some shows that do, and they'll have like, you know, if they have five hosts on there, then they'll have a competition between themselves. But yeah, that I think we take pride in that. We were both well above 500 picking against the spread. So I think we do a pretty good job with the picks, but we do keep track. We want, you know, it's like a competition, but if we really sucked at it, we'd probably stop doing it. But we're, you know, you cover the Pac-12 enough that you get a little bit better at it and you can do pretty well.
I still pretty much suck, but yeah, I buy that for you for sure. Yeah. And then there's one more, this is from, where did it go? Hoops Coach 33. Great, great podcast. A thorough and thoughtful podcast covering all things Pac-12, socialism, FIFA soccer, Larry Scott, and mostly USC and UCLA. Good job, Ryan Abraham and David Woods, but mostly Ryan. I needed to add that one because I didn't want to feel like I was editing that one out.
No. That's inside joke.
Anyway, yeah. All you people out there, who send in emails, and I know you show no discernment in the best of times and when you send certain topics and when you don't, but we are entering the deep and very dark off season here. I mean, we'll do some spring practice previews, some spring practice touch-ins, some things with all sorts of writers and stuff, but your questions that you probably weren't saving, but maybe that we didn't answer during the season, now's a great time to send them.
Yeah.
Great time, because we're going to need the content.
We're going to need some topics, but I think we should be all right for a while. I think spring football, so ASU, Dave pointed out, so ASU did start spring football actually before signing day, which is crazy. But the rest of the teams will start up pretty soon. I don't know, what is UCLA March? USC's in March.
UCLA's March, USC's March. I think most of them are March. I think there's maybe one or two more that are doing late February. But okay. For the most part, it's March and then April, I think, even with a few teams.
Now, last year, I watched all the spring games, but I no longer get Pac-12 Network. So I'm going to have to figure something out. I might get Sling or something so I can get it. Yeah, we'll figure
that. You better, because if you put me in charge of watching the spring games, as we learned last year, that's probably not happening, my friend.
I might be the only person on the planet that watched all the spring games. Like, that might be.
I don't think there's any might be about it. I think you are the only person on the planet who watched every single spring game.
Took notes.
My man out here took notes during 12 different spring games. I mean, if anybody out there has watched a spring game, like, it's not a game. It's a practice.
Yeah.
And it's
maybe
it's not an interesting practice. And
but wow. You got some nuggets. Like, we figured out who LaVisca Chenault was, you know. Like, I couldn't really pronounce his name that well at the time, but
You figured it out. I didn't figure out anything because okay. I watched like half of the UCLA game and that was it.
Nice. All right. Well, we got a cool show for you today. Before we jump into it, we have a new sponsor here on the Podcast of Champions, Mint Mobile. You might have saw their Super Bowl commercial. So they're doing the Super Bowl. They're doing the Podcast of Champions. So there's a lot of things in life that aren't right. Carpet in the showers. You don't want that. Eating dip with your fingers. Chunky style milk. And if you saw the Super Bowl commercial, that's where that's from. But also paying too much for your phone bill. That's not right. But thanks to Mint Mobile, you don't have to overpay for wireless anymore. They reimagined the wireless shopping experience and made it easy and online only, which means they can pass significant savings directly to you. And for a limited time, they're offering 2 months free when you buy your first month. That's $20 for 3 months of wireless. It's a great deal, obviously. It's only going to be here for a limited time. $20 total will get you 3 months of wireless service with 8 gigs of 4G LTE data each month. Plus unlimited nationwide talk and text. You can use your own mobile phone with any Mint Mobile plan to keep your old phone number, all your existing contacts, and they run on the fastest, most advanced LTE network. If you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee. So you can take advantage of this amazing deal from Mint Mobile before it's gone. Pay $20 for your first month of wireless. Get 2 months free by going to mintmobile.com/champs. That's mintmobile.com/champs for 3 months of premium wireless service for just $20. Mintmobile.com/champs. And a quick aside on Mint Mobile, David, my roommate back in the late 90s when I was living in Manhattan Beach, my buddy Tyler, he graduated from Harvard, was working in like financial whatever stuff, you know, whatever Harvard guys do. And he became the president of this company. It's Ultra Mobile and Mint Mobile, I guess. So he texted me. It's like, oh, we had a Super Bowl commercial. I'm like, you guys are sponsoring me on the podcast too. So, pretty cool. So shout out to my buddy Tyler, who was, he didn't make this happen. This really just came from a separate thing. We didn't even know, but it's kind of
collusion.
Cool. Yeah. But yeah, they had a Super Bowl commercial. It's crazy.
That's great. That's great. So sign up for Mint Mobile, everyone. Help out Ryan's buddy Tyler.
Yeah.
That should have been the ad right there. Yeah.
Nice.
Oh, we have so much signing day stuff to recap, Ryan.
Yeah, what did you? I mean, overall for the Pac-12, what'd you think?
Anything do we have cool? like a do we have like a Price is Right loser sound or anything like that?
We have a.
And this is one where our geographic bias might come in a little bit, because for the North teams, I mean, Oregon had its best classes in a while. Washington had a really good class. So that's something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
now USC had its worst class in a while. Its worst full class in a while, I should say. Like it's from worst, a ranking perspective.
It's worst full class since then we started keeping track. Like even right. The sanction years, like 2013 was their worst ranking previous, which was 13. But that class had 4 5 stars and 8 4 stars. It was only 13 people, you know, but it was still like it was the highest average star rating ever. So that was the worst USC class until this one. So
for contextualizing this, so the Pac-12 generally, like the narrative is that they did pretty badly. But if we're really locking in on the issues, USC recruited way worse than it usually does. And UCLA recruited way worse than it usually does. Was anyone else too far off? Because it looks like Washington and Oregon did better, but everyone else seemed kind of where they typically are. You know, ASU hovering around top 30, top 35. Cal, Utah being in the top 40-ish range. I mean, Cal can recruit a little bit better. Utah has recruited a little bit better at times, but not too different from that.
Well, there, right? So Matt Hilton, you can follow on Twitter, Matt R. Hilton posted.
Hinton.
I'm sorry, Hinton. Oh, it's not Hilton. Sorry. My bad. H-I-N-T-O-N.
You're good.
Biggest over under achievers in 24/7's 2019 composite rankings compared to their average class rank over the previous 4 years. So he did this for Power 5 program. So there are three Pac-12 teams that are on this list. So it's not just USC and UCLA down, but also Utah, which is a little bit surprising. So Louisville did the worst. 40 spot, but 28 spots worse for UCLA. They were 43rd this year, 15th before. USC dropped 14 spots. That's probably going to go up to 16 because one of their commits, Puka Nacua, is not going to sign, most likely going to sign with Washington or Oregon. And if he's like their third highest ranked player in the class. So they'll drop from 18 to 20. So that would be
The Utah one changed though, because Utah's now at 43 instead of 48.
Oh, so they moved up.
They wouldn't be included in this list anymore.
Oh, nice. Okay. So this was Utah.
This is a couple of days ago. Yeah. Okay. So they must have gotten a late guy. Let's see.
I think I do remember that Utah kind of moving up.
Yeah.
A little
bit. I wonder if this was before the Wilmore thing. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe it was and I think Washington State also let me look them up real quick. I mean, they're the 11th best class in the conference. That's 64th, 11th in the Pac-12. Last year, they were 45th. So that's a pretty big, jump to go from 45th last year to 64 this year. I didn't see.
I think the middle is pretty soft when you're looking at the rankings because the difference between like the 64th best class and like the, 44th is like, what is it? 30 points here?
Yeah.
About 20 points. So, and then the difference, I mean, at the top level, it's a big difference between different levels, but the middle in these rankings is just kind of soft, which is why I wasn't getting too excited about it. The big difference is when you have teams, USC, a typical top 8 recruiting power, drop into 20th. Whoa. Yeah. And UCLA, a typical top 15, top 20 recruiting power, drop into 44th.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Utah being in, variance level between 35 and 55, I don't think that's any real difference. That's just, whether they had if they had a full class of 24 or 25 guys this class, they probably would have been right around 35 again or 30.
Yeah.
But when you get into the differences at the top, you had two big jumpers, but even Oregon, they didn't jump up enough commensurate, like in measure compared to UCLA and USC to make up for that. They went up to 7, but last year they were what? 13.
Yeah.
So that's the issue. I mean, you have the two LA schools falling off drastically and not anyone else really making up for it.
And I think when you dig down into the numbers, like what David said about the middle, and I did this recently when you look at, so just for people, like if you don't, follow recruiting as much, typically there's 32 five stars in every class. And I hate when people are like, see that the Super Bowl MVP was a 2-star, that the recruiting rankings don't matter. It's like, you go look in the class, and I did this, there's like over 1,500 three stars in like the in a class, and there's 32 five stars. So yes, there's a much bigger talent pool to choose from. And the four stars, there's like a couple hundred, 250, something like that. I forget exactly what it is. Maybe it's 300. It's something in that range. But if you're in the four-star range, I mean, they're going to be pretty good dudes. But in the three stars, if you're like ranked, you know, number 350 as a three-star, that's pretty close to a four-star. But if you're ranked like 1,500, you're still a three-star. There's a big difference between those two. And it's funny, I don't know if you ever get in this debate, Dave, but people are like, this is why stars don't matter. And like in USC signed a whole bunch of three stars. They signed 18 and they've never signed more than 11. So some people are just like, yeah, you want three stars because they're the ones that you know, develop. And it's like, shut up. That's not right. But I said, okay, I'm going to take a random pool of 10 five stars from a recruiting class and then 10 three stars. And let's see what their careers ended up. So I went back to 2014. I did it for a couple, and I haven't tabulated everything yet, but it's funny. Like, one of the pools of three stars, like, no one's in the NFL. And, like, the five stars, like, most of them are. It's, like, it's, you know, it's pretty crazy. But one of the random pools of three stars I did, Patrick Mahomes came up, and Harrison Phillips from it's Harrison Phillips, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
From Stanford. And a couple other guys that were, like, so, like, I hit the right notes. But those were mostly the higher-ranked three stars. So, if you break down the number, I mean, just look at like how many three stars there are, and there's a whole bunch of two stars and stuff too, but there's a lot of bodies to choose from. And, you know, odds are some of those guys are going to just get better and develop into somebody, you know, amazing, like a Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Well, my theory on it is that we really fail everyone in high school when we make calculus part of the basic math track and not statistics. Because people don't understand, like they don't understand that you're making the calculation based off of the amount total available. So if there's only two former five stars who make an NFL all pro team, that's still pretty damn good, because that's a pretty damn good hit rate. And it's more than that almost every single year. It's way more than that. It's the hit rate out of how many four stars out of the total number of four stars available end up hitting at the NFL level. How many three stars out of the total number of three stars available? Generally speaking, the recruiting rankings do a damn good job of doing this. Now, if you want to get into real nuance of it, there might be some confirmation bias. I don't think evaluations are perfect at any level. We've talked about this before, but you could have the same confirmation bias that goes into whether or not a kid goes to a good high school program. You know, he gets quote unquote recruited to Modern Day or whatever, because somebody was hyping him up as an eighth grader. And then because he got hyped up, maybe he's not that good, but he then gets a five-star ranking, because, you know, there's degrees of these things, and maybe he was more of a four-star talent. And then there's this confirmation bias that goes forward, because then he starts early as a college player and gets a little bit more attention and development. And then he gets the confirmation bias, and now he's a top five pick when maybe his talent didn't warrant that. You could make an argument to me about that. But generally speaking, the whole system does a really good job.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at it from just like a team specific standpoint, I'm not going to trust Clay Helton's ability to develop three stars, because where's the proof of any of that? He can barely win with five stars and four stars. So what makes you think he's suddenly going to develop a great evaluation skill and a great development skill and get these three stars to perform better? But you give that same group to Chris Peterson, I might say, okay, I'll buy your argument that this is a good group of players. But for Clay Helton, no, he's shown he can't win with top talent. So why would you think he's going to win with developed talent?
Yeah, and I think there's a DNA of certain schools. And I think both USC and UCLA got away from their DNA this past class. And people are like, well, you're trying to get three stars because those are ones you know, if that was your plan, like if your plan was going into the season, and this was Chip Kelly's plan, apparently, to get the OKGs, what Chris Peterson calls our kind of guys. We talked about this with Brandon Huffman. That's great. You know, I think Washington started off doing that, and then they've built up more and more, getting more of the four stars, you know, and higher ranked players each year. And I think that's a great way to do it. But that's the DNA of how he runs his program. USC's DNA has not been to, Yeah, that you bring in some three stars, but it's been to bring in the highest ranked players you could possibly rank, whatever egos, whatever is involved, and just do that. And this is a shift away from that. UCLA is the same sort of thing. You're in LA, you can bring in local four and five star guys and do really well with that. Chip Kelly shifted away. So he's trying to change the DNA of the way like a UCLA program recruits. And the weird part is like the reason we all thought that Chip Kelly would be a great hire is because what would his system do with all that top talent?
But you accept the recruiting as a given.
Yes.
You accept you expect that and you're like, okay, well, Chip Kelly did it with top 40 guys at Oregon. What's he gonna do with top 20 guys at UCLA? And lo and behold, he's trying to recruit like it's Minnesota. Or not even. I'm assuming Minnesota recruits hard. The UCLA thing, I think, is even USC is it's in a familiar territory for anybody who's followed. I think any program that's on its, you know, on the final year of a coach, they're in dead man walking territory, and their dead man walking territory is still a top 20 class. But that's what it is. Guys just don't want to sign on with a coach who's very likely not going to be there in a year. UCLA is in the first year of Chip Kelly. This is the first offseason. It doesn't make any sense what they tried to do this cycle. They tried to make the UCLA offer coveted, coming off of a bad couple of years under Jim Mora, and then what was a very bad first year under Chip Kelly, going 3-9. They tried to make it an exclusive coveted offer. They tried to emphasize guys who wanted to be Bruins versus guys they actually had to sell and recruit hard. And the end result was a complete flop. And that's not to say that some of these 19 guys that UCLA signed can't be good, but it's the same thing that you were talking about. You signed a group of three stars. Yeah, there can definitely be a hit rate, and maybe Chip Kelly is a great developer. But if you're playing the larger numbers and you're looking at the larger scope of things, it's a little bit more questionable. And then on top of that, signing only 19 guys when upwards of 30 guys have left the program either through transfer or injury or whatever since Chip Kelly came on board, you needed more numbers. UCLA is going to be in kind of self-sanctioning territory next year unless they really hit the transfer market hard, because they're at about 73 scholarship players heading into next season now. And wow, that's not even counting whatever attrition might happen in spring, whatever attrition is still to come. And it's complete failure. And that's just on the effort. And so I think it's similar results for USC and UCLA in terms of the relative disappointment compared to their usual. But I think two different methods at play.
There's also some concern, David. We can talk about the Pac-12 in general. We know Oregon had the top class. They got five players from the top 20 in California. So that's a huge move. Washington ended up getting three of them. USC, UCLA, Stanford, and Cal combined to get four of the top 20 in California. Typically, like USC will get like 8 to 10 of them, like just themselves. So it's definitely been a shift. I think the Pac-12 North has been able to take advantage. Four of the top, you know, six classes in the Pac-12 are from the North. So I think that's certainly a strong move. But I think the most concerning thing to me, David, is that you look at Texas got as many top 20 players in California as USC did. They got two. Seven of the top 20 players in California left the Pac-12 footprint. And someone asked on Twitter, is that typical? And I went through the numbers the last several years. I think there was one year where the Pac-12 lost eight, but usually most of, the majority of them, maybe three or four leave and the rest stay in the Pac-12. But, John Wilner's wrote about this too, where like the Alabama recruiters, when Tasha Poy was there and Clemson coming in, Texas coming in, Michigan, like they're coming in and getting and picking out. They sense weakness in the Pac-12, and they're able to pick out some of the best players in California. And it could be somewhat of a talent drain, I guess, on the conference, which obviously isn't going in the right direction now. But this could make things worse.
Yeah, you can't allow. I mean, if it's interconference, it's one thing, right? Because at least the talent is staying within the conference. But you can't allow those programs to poach really much at all, given how difficult it is for really any Pac-12 school to pull out of the South. The Pac-12 can generally recruit Texas pretty well. but anywhere in the deep South is very, very tough. And allowing any of those programs to come out west at all is generally a bad thing, even if it's Texas. But for Oregon and Washington, I think it's a combination of two things. Finally, the perennial North dominance, I think, is finally taking hold a little bit with some of these, you know, I think some of the high school programs in California, but also just some of the kids, you know, they saw Oregon under Helfrich and Chip Kelly, and they've seen, and Cristobal is obviously doing an incredible job recruiting there. And then Washington's, you know, relative dominance of the conference over the last 3 or 4 years. You see all of that and for a long enough period of time, and that starts to shift the winds a little bit on its own. And then you combine that with, again, USC and UCLA recruiting at a historically low level for each school. It was a great combination for those two North schools, and it's going to set them up now. I mean, we've seen Oregon dominate the conference in the past with top 20-ish classes, top 25-ish classes. This is two back-to-back top 15 classes. And Washington, we've seen them win the conference with on the backs of what were top 30-ish classes. What are they going to do with consistent top 20 with Chris Peterson as their head coach? It's setting up for even more kind of an uneven balance between the North and the South in the Pac-12.
Yeah, for sure. And I think Washington has the ability when you bring in some of those athletes where you see when they made the playoff a couple years ago, maybe, you know, there was a deficiency there. What can they do with the upgraded level of athlete? If Chris Peterson, you know, he's obviously a great coach. Can he keep it up at that level and then compete when you do make it to the college football playoff? And then obviously Oregon's trying to get back into that. There's going to be a lot of talent there. Little concerning last year when you had a guy like Justin Herbert and he's coming back and the offense would still struggle at times. So I think, you know, putting that stuff together, I think you got to give him a little bit more time. But the pieces are going to be there if they get coached up well that Oregon can make a run too. And, you know, you never count out Stanford. They had a, you know, top four class in the Pac-12. They didn't run the ball very well last year. We'll see, but it looks like there's a lot of positive stories coming from there. And then having like Washington State be like an afterthought when they won, as many games as they won and just didn't get, you know, bring in the greatest recruiting class, but they usually don't. And he does well with that. So that the good storylines are in the North right now. But you know, in the South, it's just sort of this muddled mess a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's going to need to get corrected here pretty soon if the South wants to start, you know, actually winning the conference occasionally. I do want to shout out, though, I think ASU really did do a good job. I think their class ended up pretty strong. And I think truly a testament to the effort of Antonio Pierce. But that was, I think that was a really good table setter class for, again, kind of the first year coach in his first big class. I mean, nailing the top 31 class at ASU, that's pretty good, especially when it's not a 25-man class. It was a 21 guy class. Yeah. So that was pretty good.
And they, you know, they were already done. They're like, we're done. We're going to start spring football before signing day.
Right.
So we talked about the kind of the drain a little bit. I wanted to touch on like the transfer portal and the early signing period a bit, because these are things that have changed the way, you know, we've covered this for a while. This has changed the way the landscape, and I think there's some programs in the Pac-12 that have done a pretty good job of taking advantage of this and others that haven't. But what are your thoughts on this? How, you know, and we just learned that Justin Fields is going to be immediately eligible. So does that open up complete free agency? We'll find out with Brew McCoy leaving USC and going to Texas if he gets a waiver and then becomes immediately eligible. But with the early signing period and the transfer portal, how do you think this has changed recruiting?
Well, the early signing period has changed it drastically. It's completely devalued February. There's just not many guys available anymore. Most dudes are signing in the early signing period. I wish they would make it earlier. If they're going to have two signing periods, I don't know that there's much value gained in doing it in December versus February. But I think that has changed things drastically. I think it informed part of, I mean, speaking for UCLA, I think it informed part of their strategy because they were thinking, okay, most everyone will fill up and then we can kind of poach who's left, which sort of worked when Chip Kelly first came in, didn't work this last cycle. But I think that has just, it's basically just shifted the timeline up a little bit earlier because people are treating December more or less like what February used to be. The transfer portal is interesting. We're not really going to know. I mean, from a player perspective, we know right now that more guys are going in. But I don't know at what level of seriousness they're going in. Are they testing the waters? Are they, you know, it's we won't really know until the cycle is complete exactly how much player movement this actually, you know, entails. But there's a, I mean, what is it like? Aren't there like 2,000 people in that portal now?
I think it was like 12 or 1,400 Division I guys, you know, FBS guys.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, that's wild. And we'll see how what that ends up looking like and if how many of these guys, because previously you would see transfers and sometimes guys would transfer out and then just end up at the FCS level because it turned out they're probably just not good enough for this level. How much of this will end up that? How much of these are inter-FBS impact transfers? Is it really that much different from years past? And we won't really know. I mean, not even really after the first year. We're not really going to know until a few years. I guess the thing we'll be able to judge this year is how many guys actually move on from one FBS program to another. I think that's going to be interesting. I don't know how much it has changed people's strategies in terms of recruiting. You still saw a lot of guys take full classes of players. Is it realistic to assume that some school might be able to pick up 8 or 10 transfers in a single cycle? I kind of doubt it, but it's going to be interesting. And I don't know that we'll know the full ramifications until we see a full couple of cycles of it.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think it's really going to impact, it could help programs that are stable. I think it could really impact struggling programs because the early signing period, I hate the timing of it. And I think we probably talked about it on this show too, where it's a time when it's not just, you know, your teams are preparing for bowl games. It's just too close to the regular signing period. I think the intention was to make it so guys that are like, you know, the quarterback that's been committed for a year and a half can just sign. They didn't realize that, you know, this is one of those unintended consequences things. It changed signing day. It made it this early period. And I think you'd be better off having something in like, you know, something earlier, whenever, if you want to do August or whatever, have it then where the guys that are just like, I'm signing with this school no matter what, they can sign. It's a few, it's a handful. I think that was the intent. Is to have like a handful of people sign. Now that everyone's signing, I just think you put it too close to the regular one. And so if you're a team that's, you know, firing your coach and struggling, I think there's got a lot of decisions are going to be made because of this early signing period as far as hiring, firing coaches and things like that. And then it's going to impact a lot of the players. If a guy gets fired right after you sign, you know, do they want to transfer out? They go into the portal. And if you're a struggling team, you might have issues with that because of your coaching changes for signing day. But then you might have issues with players wanting to leave because it looks like it's a sinking ship. And if you can just be eligible right away, there's no incentive really to stay. So I think I don't like the direction it's going, at least, you know, personally, but I kind of would like to see a signing period, early signing period where you can just sign if you want to, but it's before December. Like the timing for me is the bad part of it.
Yeah, I think if I had like two tweaks for each, I would put the early signing period like, I don't know, August, yeah, July, something where it's basically you can do your official visit in the spring and then sign if you want to. So that, you know, like quarterbacks oftentimes want to show that they're locked up to a school so they can help recruit. Like that's a big thing with a lot of schools. But just there's some guys who just know from the beginning, oh, yeah, I'm done. And I want to be done. There's some guys who hate the recruiting process. They're few and far between, but there are a few. So yeah, let them get it done. But I would do that early, not yeah. after.
I think that's what they that's wanted crazy. This to be. I don't think they realized it was going to take over signing day. You know, like it's really what it's done.
But it like doesn't even change. What it does is I think for certain coaches, it helps them a little bit. I think Saban was saying, I don't know. Somebody was saying it helps them a little bit, but, for the players, I don't know that it gives them really any benefit. I mean, it doesn't. I mean, it just basically makes it so that, okay, I can, if I don't like recruiting, okay, that's a month off from it. But
yeah,
otherwise it's not that much. But if you let them sign in July, then they can play their whole senior season not having to worry about any of that stuff. I think that could actually, that could actually be beneficial for guys rather than just a, I don't know, a new February.
Yeah.
The transfer portal, I would like it to be even a little bit more extreme. Let it be known that everyone is immediately eligible. Like, let that be absolutely true. Wow. Keep the rules on contact, though. So you can't be contacted until you are in the portal. It would make it, I think, more difficult for some teams to plan for it. And you would still want to recruit high school very heavily because you don't really want to change that game. Because also, I don't know, for only a couple of schools is going to be sustainable to just build off the portal. But yeah, I'm all for a little bit more freedom with players who want to transfer out. I think that's fine. Because I think it would sort itself out a little bit over time. The spate of true freshmen who transfer out right now because they don't like that they're not going to get a starting spot. I think that's happening regardless. So I don't know that this would change it at all. And I don't know. I think we should see more good players playing, and getting them immediately eligible will let them play and let them, you know, build some cachet for their future prospects. I don't really care about the teams. I mean, they're going to, teams will have some benefit from it in that they can pick up transfers. And if you've got a program where guys are transferring out willy-nilly, well, you've probably got a problem in your program.
One quick thing on the early signing period. I think the players that are helped are the players that don't sign, because there's such a small pool of players to choose from after the early signing period. If you're like the only four-star running back that hasn't signed, and there's like five teams out there that need running backs, you might be getting offers from schools that wouldn't have offered you otherwise. So I think some people have played it smart, and they can, even if they're like a middling three-star guy, a struggling program like USC comes along and they have to offer a bunch of dudes as plan B and plan C. So you may have never got a scholarship offer to USC or Ohio State or something like that, but they missed on some guys for the early signing period, and you're the only one left That's decent, then you get to go to a school that maybe you wouldn't have gone to otherwise.
Yep, that's true.
Interesting. Yeah, and with the transfers, if you open it up and it becomes free agency, you wonder like, well, okay, so say Iowa State wakes up and like half the team transfers out, you can only bring in 25 guys every recruiting period, but you still have the transfer portal there. So you could go back and go into your free agency. So if you lose some free agents, you can go back and get other ones. And try to bring them in. So maybe you have to go and you're bringing in some former, D2 guys or something. I don't know. But at least if it's open like that for everybody, then I think if you lose people, you could still go out and try to fix that. So I don't think it would be the worst thing. And, if you're a regular college student, you can leave whenever you want. So I don't have an issue with that either.
Yeah, I think it gives players more power. Right now, they're pretty powerless in this entire whole deal. So giving them a little bit more leverage, a little bit more of a stick, I think would help and make it so, I don't know, there'd be a more accountability with coaches and kind of the screwed up things they do. If Maryland had 40 transfers coming out the year before that kid died, well, maybe that's a sign that you need to figure some things out.
Yeah.
I think there'd be a lot of potential benefit beyond just simply who's going to be good and who's going to be bad.
Yeah. One of the other topics, too, I saw this story on SB Nation, so they do all the great S&P Plus work, Bill Connolly and stuff, and Dave's more of an expert on this, but it's basically the college football rankings from the last 5 years, and basically 11, he took the 11 Power 5 teams that saw their averages fall the most over that period. Of those 11 Pac-12 teams, six of them were in the Pac-12, so half the Pac-12 was on this list, and he wrote in there, it's not news that the Pac-12 has been struggling. It's had a team in the college football playoff just once in four seasons, but that's happenstance. This proves that the issues run deeper than simply not having a 12-1 or 13-0 conference champion. Only three Pac-12 teams, Cal, Utah, and Washington State, improved their averages on the list, and only Cal did so by more than just 1 point. Colorado stayed the same. Washington slipped ever so slightly. And the other eight teams all regressed. That is, to put it lightly, disconcerting. So I don't know if you want to, if you saw that, Dave, and any thoughts on that. But that's, it doesn't seem like the teams in the Pac-12 are trending in the right direction.
No. And I think, you know, some of it is the snapshot that he pulled. What was it, the last four seasons,
I think five. I think 5 years, yeah.
Washington, in a snapshot that includes the 2 years before Peterson really got it rolling, yeah. I mean, it's not going to look as great, but they are a different team over the last 3 years than they were in the beginning stretch. So a snapshot that includes just the past 3 years might be more favorable to Washington, but it's also going to be probably much more detrimental to, say, UCLA. So there's, yeah, I mean, there's real serious problems here. You know, we talked about it, I think, last week when we were talking how that 2013 season for the Pac-12 was like a historical high or pretty close to it.
Yeah.
With four SRS top 10 teams. It's kind of dropped off a cliff. And it's easy to point to individual reasons why. Oregon, it was a slow burn, but fell apart after Chip Kelly. It took 3 years of Mark Helfrich for that to fully happen, but it was trending, not great, even with a college football playoff appearance. And Stanford has still kind of trucked along, but hasn't reached that peak again. Maybe just because of the lack of truly elite quarterback or whatever you want to say, but. I mean, even if you're pointing at all of that individual stuff, it's just not good. And you had a lot of that 2012 class of coaches just kind of peter out over the last 5 years. You know, Todd Graham at ASU, Jim Moore at UCLA. But that's all kind of individual. I don't really have a great explanation for it on a broad scale because the money issues didn't really even start hitting 5 years ago. Like, that's become more of a very recent thing. It doesn't. I mean, I think you could probably look at talent trends. You know, who's been recruiting well in different areas. But no, I think it's an unfortunate time to just have one of those kind of general downturns. Because there's a lot of other factors that you can point to that I don't know that they explain it. Like, I don't think the money issues explain this right now. This is more of a. This is something that started 5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's a combination of a lot of things. And it's not just, like you said, making the college football playoff once in the last 4 years. It's Washington State going 10-2 and not being in the top 13 and not being able to, or top 12, and making a New Year's Six Bowl. So it's like things would have to fall exactly right for the Pac-12 to make a college football playoff. They're not getting the benefit of the doubt. They, you know, you look at these advanced stats and the teams are trending in the wrong direction in general. Now, I think there's some potential there. I mean, but you're looking at, it's mostly going to be in the Pac-12 North, you know, unless we can see ASU make some kind of crazy run or Utah, you know, they're capable. The teams are capable. I mean, a lot of the teams are, but we just have seen them just kind of beat up on each other and no one really stands out, especially in the South. So we'll see if this changes at all, but it's not it seems like a pretty disturbing trend.
Yeah. And I think you can still pin a lot of it on USC, just not being and performing like USC, because whichever 5 year period you're looking at, USC has been historically not USC for the last essentially decade. They were in this average, they've averaged an S&P Plus ranking of 14 over the last 5 years, which is about, I don't know, eight spots below where they should be on average. And the previous 5 years to that, they were averaging 12th. So it's not like they've dropped off considerably, but they've just been at such a downturn that when you also take away Stanford performing at a super elite level and you also take away Oregon performing at a super elite level, it leaves a complete vacuum. You know, you can have those teams fill it. You can have Washington fill it. But when they're not consistently doing it and USC is also just not doing what it should do at its recruiting level, there's just a vacuum at the top. And yeah, you've got UCLA performing like basically the UCLA we've come to know and hate over the last 20 years, which is, oh yeah, we don't know what the hell we're doing. We're going to recruit pretty well most of the time, unless Chip Kelly's the coach, but we're probably not going to win too many games. It just, you've got a complete vacuum at the top. And is, you know, a surging Utah or a surging Washington State capable of putting together 5 years of, you know, top 15 play? I don't know. But we know that USC is capable of it. We know that Oregon and Stanford are capable of it in the right circumstances. We know that Washington's capable of it. Those who are older than 40 remember that UCLA is capable of doing it. But it's just none of those teams are doing it over the last 5 years, except for this brief surge with Washington over the last 3 years. So you just need a standard bearer. You need one of these programs that historically has shown the ability to do it, and hopefully more than one, start doing it again. And Washington's in the process, but they could really use a couple more. And yeah. Oregon's recruiting like it. USC, if and when they fire Clay Helton and hire a new coach, is going to be immediately capable of doing it again. Stanford, I think, is still hovering around that possibility, but that's what needs to happen. One of these other schools needs to step up alongside Washington and start performing that way.
It'd be cool to see Washington State keep doing that too. I mean, they didn't have a great recruiting class, but man, they just always seem to be pretty good up there. But I think if they could recruit a little bit better, it's not easy to recruit to Pullman, but you could be in there. And you know, UCLA, David, they could always be back because they all, you know, they bring in top 15 classes every year. So there's so it's, you know, I mean, didn't, like, who was the wide receiver coach for the Denver Broncos that came in? He recruited well, right?
Greg Bagan certainly thought he was going to.
Greg said he was going to be the best recruiter of like all time or something. But he had pretty good classes, right?
A couple of the years were okay, but no, he mostly recruited at a relatively subpar level for UCLA. Okay.
Not Chip Kelly levels, but not.
No. No one has touched what Chip Kelly is attempting to do right now, which is turn UCLA into a school in the Midwest. I think if you're looking at the level for what UCLA should be capable of pretty consistently, look at those Mora classes, because the Neuheisel ones were like, Neuheisel was a freaky good recruiter. I'll give him that. And so he was able to turn some really crappy results on the field into some really good classes. Mora, he had a couple of good classes, but for the most part, it was just comfortably top 15, top 20. And I think that is the resting level of UCLA if they just don't get in their own way recruiting wise, and which they're currently attempting to do.
I feel bad. We always kind of take little shots at Carl Durrell, but he's still coaching. He was at the New York Jets as a wide receiver coach for 3 years, 2015 to 2018. He's now the Miami Dolphins wide receivers coach. He was offensive coordinator at Vanderbilt and quarterbacks coach in 2014. So that only lasted a year, but mostly NFL stuff. One stop at Vanderbilt since he left UCLA.
Yeah. Hasn't had a storied career since then. But yeah, no, I mean, he's kept coaching. I think
you're working. It's like you must be pretty good at your job, you know?
Yeah.
I would think.
Yeah.
Cool.
Sure.
Should we jump into some questions?
I mean, I've got something to talk to you about.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yeah. You know, we're invested, I think, in this podcast. We're invested in its success, right, Ryan?
Very much so.
Very much so. Very much so. Well, did you know Robinhood is an investing app that lets you buy and sell stocks instead of, you know, interest in a podcast? ETFs, options, and cryptos, all commission-free. While other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, Robinhood doesn't charge any commission fees, so you can trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Plus, there is no account minimum deposit needed to get started, so you can start investing at any level. The simple, intuitive design of Robinhood makes investing easy for newcomers and experts alike. View easy-to-understand charts and marketing data, and place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. You can also view stock, quote, collections, such as 100 most popular. With Robinhood, you can learn how to invest in the market as you build your portfolio. Discover new stocks, track your favorite companies, and get custom notifications for price movements so you never miss the right moment to invest. Robinhood is giving listeners of Podcast of Champions a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Sign up at champions.robinhood.com. robinhood.com. That's champions.robinhood.com.
Yeah, go sign up. I got the app on my phone. It's pretty cool. And if you can set up notifications, so just like you get a text message or something, like if you're worried about, hey, what, you know, if, you know, when is Apple going to drop below a certain level, they can send you notifications for that. So it's pretty cool. Go check it out. champions.robinhood.com.
Beautiful.
We have a question, David, and you know, remember we get these suggestions and they're like, pick whatever for the Pac-12. We had a good one with like who would be a beer for each Pac-12 team. And Mark wrote in, you want me to read this one? We can do this.
Sure.
Hey guys, a week ago, and I'm losing my voice right now. I submitted the question, if the Pac-12 were a brewery, what type of beer would each Pac-12 school be? You smartly declined to answer since it was a pretty loaded and tough question to break down. In retrospect, that said, I've decided to put my money where my mouth is and supply some thoughts. So here we go. All right, so here's Mark's thoughts. Washington, a pretty good red ale. I like red ales. That's good. Nothing flashy, but pretty good, and currently the best beer in our brewery. This would be the one that keeps getting submitted at brewing festivals and always gets honorable mention, perennially losing to the much better beers from other regions. Isn't the grill? So I like red. We talk about this. I like reds and ambers and things like that for whatever reason.
I like it cold. I like cold beer.
Cold beer is good. Washington State, a porter. Good for a working class guy or girl on those cold Pullman nights. Yeah, those are like, kind of like a
hefty. I like porters.
Yeah, they're like, you know, more fulfilling. You know, there's a little hefty beer, I guess. Oregon, one of those really, really, really hoppy IPAs with a wild label and a crazy name like Go Duck Yourself. I could see that.
Yeah, I could buy that.
Oregon State, a peanut butter stout. Okay. Quirky, and every once in a while, it's good. I'm probably thinking this because of Belching Beaver Brewery, which has this beer. Oh, well, he did some research here. Stanford, a glass of Pinot Noir. that's fair, I guess. Cal, a, quote, hazy pale ale, somehow infused with hemp, called Rasputin's Pale Ale. Like that. Colorado, of course, like just like you mentioned, because seriously, everyone drinks that there, or at least they did when I went to a game years back. Usually, I mean, that's a beer that's associated with the state, so it's hard to go away from that. Utah, a caffeine-free root beer, I assume. Don't you have to register at the DMV to buy a beer in Utah or something? I don't think it's like that. They used to have to buy little cards. I think it was in Park City. To go into a bar, you had to, it was like you had to become a member. They were like clubs and stuff, but that was a while ago. I don't think you still have to do that.
I just skipped ahead to Arizona, but keep going.
Okay. Arizona State, a party lager similar to Bud Light. I could see that. Like Arizona State would be good. Arizona, this would actually be, I'm sorry. What were you saying?
Nothing. Okay. I just said I skipped ahead to Arizona, but just keep going.
Okay. Arizona, this would actually just be a plastic cup of Gatorade and vodka. Red Solo cup. Okay. That's awesome. Gatorade. UCLA, an English-style ale that's light and pretty forgettable, but leaves a bitter aftertaste, just like a season of UCLA football. And USC, this would actually be a cocktail, a Molotov cocktail to be exact, since the entire school seems to always be putting out crazy fires. Zing! Thanks from Mark.
Love it.
That was good stuff,
Mark.
I liked
all that. Yeah, that was way better than we would have done. All right. What's next? All right. This is a text message. We don't know who it's from because, again, we don't have that information in front of us. Reading Ryan's Trogan War Room. I think he missed a J there and it went G instead.
Misspelling.
And here's a little inside info I got from a former head of the USC Board of Trustees. The $15 million buyout was definitely the reason they kept Clay, but according to him, that was the number for not just Clay, but the entire staff. Makes the extension he got from Lynn Swann slightly less bonkers, only slightly.
Yeah, so if you don't know, there was a report. I think Yahoo put a report out there that Clay Helton's buyout was north of $15 million. And I had heard even, you know, and that seemed ridiculous. And then I had heard a number that was even bigger than that. We put some stuff in the War Room. That's like a Friday Insiders column we put out every Friday. But so what Lynn Swann did was hire or sign Clay Helton to an extension because his contract was coming up in February of 2018. And there was no one trying to hire Clay Helton. There was no reason that you needed to lock him up because he would be going somewhere. He was basically, even after winning the Pac-12 championship, a lot of people thought he was on thin ice and he really had to perform well. And obviously he didn't, go in 5-7. But if Lynn Swann, who's never been an athletic director before, got raked over the coals by Jimmy Sexton and really did sign him to a $15 million buyout or whatever, some number like that, it's absolutely ridiculous. And if that's the reason you end up keeping him, you might have a second bad year in a row just because of a horrible decision that your inexperienced athletic director made. And so I'm not sure if it includes the assistants. I do know that, T. Martin was fired. He's now hired by the Tennessee Volunteers. He had 2 years left on his deal and was getting about $1 million a year. So they're still paying for him no matter what. Now it's offset a little bit by whatever he's making at Tennessee. But I would think the big deal is not necessarily the assistants, because they fired probably their most expensive one with 2 years left on his deal. But the $15 million thing, if you really did sign that, that's just a colossal mistake from an inexperienced athletic department.
Yep.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Cool. Let's see what else we got. This is Keith in Oakland. Hello, Ryan and Dave. Which game did you guys enjoy watching more, the Super Bowl or the Pac-12 title game?
Oh, man. I'd almost have to go Pac-12 title game here.
Yeah. I was not. I mean, it was the Super Bowl was in your town. I was in Vegas and we were in like a big suite. So the sound wasn't great, but we were just, watching and stuff. So it's sort of casual watching. It wasn't like I was watching on my couch and listening to every word that the commentator said, but it just was kind of boring to me. I wasn't a huge fan. There's some people said it was great, all the defense, and there was, I think Bill Belichick had a brilliant game plan and all that stuff, but it just wasn't that. I was ready for a party and it just wasn't that exciting. So I would go Pac-12 title game too.
Yeah. The Pac-12 title game felt more competitive. It was obviously a slog and awful, but it was, it was at least, it felt like a game. This, I the entire time, and I had absolutely no rooting interest except like the general vague rooting against the Patriots that everyone possesses. The Patriots just felt like they were toying with them the entire time. Yeah. Like, and toying with us as viewers, like at any given moment, it felt like, oh yeah, they could just score or whatever. Cause they were moving the ball between the 20s easily, like just up and down the field constantly. Whereas the Rams, it felt like to like get a single yard, they had to like negotiate and sell their soul. And the end result was just a bitter, awful, ugly game. And the Rams didn't look like they belonged on the same field at all, whereas Utah was competitive and they just couldn't score at all, but they looked like they at least belonged. The Rams didn't. I mean, they looked like absolute crap. I thought their defense, a lot of people were lauding their defense after that game. I didn't get that. Yeah, they kept the Patriots from scoring a bunch, but they were allowing them to move the ball, I mean, at will. So anyway, I thought the Rams looked so inferior to the Patriots. And then even with that, it wasn't a blowout because the Patriots were just so committed to not like doing too much that it just ended up being just a miserable game to watch.
Yeah.
I never want to watch any game like that again.
No, I mean, like, I don't like, LSU, Alabama 9-3 or whatever. Like, I don't like those games either. It felt like that. They were just toying with them. The genius Sean McVay, the offense couldn't do anything. They needed, what was it, like a 52-yard field goal was the only score they had in the game. And maybe the benefit of this, David, is like if McVay won, then you're talking about like there's a offensive coordinator opening for like the Cal Bears. They're going to go and hire Sean McVay's cleaning lady's niece, because she's anything associated with Sean McVay was going to be just gold.
Oh, yeah.
Now the shine's off of it a little bit. Well, if it's the first time through, you're going against like the, this is like Luke Skywalker going against the Emperor, So it's just, it was going to be tough the first time through, but I think they're going to be better going forward. But man, that game just wasn't, it just wasn't enjoyable for me to watch. It was just more about drinking and having fun.
Yeah. So the Patriots averaged 6 yards a play in that game. Like, anybody talking about the Rams defense, as if the Rams defense actually played well, I don't know that they actually watched the game. Like, they weren't great.
No.
You allowed 6 yards of play, you're allowing a lot of explosive plays.
There was a sack on Tom Brady. Like, that's, you know, there was one sack, right? Was it one? I think there was just one sack, but
yeah, one yeah. sack. And I, you know, Goff, I don't know if he's it.
Was that Jake Browning that was playing and not Goff, or was it?
He was just, I mean, and you know, he's obviously a young guy thrust into a tough spot, but that wasn't good. Yeah, I mean, it's the first time through for McVay, for Goff, for the whole thing, so maybe they'll get better. But yeah, that was just a horrendous football game.
They had to
Belichick's obviously the GOAT, but he's, yeah, goddamn.
He's ridiculous. And yeah, you got to use Gurley more. It's weird. I was, you know, rooting for the Rams more. I mean, I wasn't really rooting for anyone, but, you know, I live in L.A., so I like the Rams. I went to high school in Massachusetts, but, like, I grew up really first in Pennsylvania, you know, Pittsburgh, and so I've just been a Steeler fan. I never, like, adopted the Patriots when I moved there. My dad did, and, like, all, you know, all my friends back home do, but so I don't, like, yeah, if they win, it's fine. Like, that's where I went to high school, but it's not like I, you know, just diehard Patriots fan or anything. I, you know, I like the Steelers more than anything. So it would have been kind of cool for the Rams to, you know, bring home a title to Los Angeles, but it just wasn't. Maybe that's part of it, but, man, it just wasn't pretty.
No. All right. Next question.
Yeah.
This is from Brian. Brian says, response to a question from last week and Super Bowl. We're going to try to finish this up before Ryan dies over there. First off, thanks for keeping the offseason exciting and college football full for us again this year. First, I want to respond to the caller last week who said Oregon State was an hour from Boise State. As an alumni of Oregon State, I can tell you that it is nowhere near Boise State. In fact, it's an eight-hour drive. Wazoo is the closest school at 5 hours. Although I don't blame the guy for having no clue where Corvallis is, because really, why would you need to know unless you attend the school? On the Super Bowl, I want to congratulate all the people who watched as the Rams copied the classic Oregon State strategy of having their punter be by far their best player. Go Hecker and go Beavs. As always, love the pod, and thanks for all you do. Brian from Walnut Creek, go Beavs and Hecker for MVP. Thank you, Brian.
Hecker is ridiculous. And there was a chance they could have gone for it. It was like fourth and short, and then they end up doing a delay of game. It was like fourth and two, I think. I mean, it's like that would have been your best offensive play. You just let Hecker go back there and throw a pass. I'm sure they would have got the first down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I do like him. Let's see. Oh, we had, this is a text message again. This is from Oz. Love the pod. Been listening since the beginning. Well, thanks. Thanks, Oz. Appreciate that. I've been wondering if you two are able to release some data about what Pac-12 24/7 sites have the most and fewest subscribers. Does the most subscribed Pac-12 24/7 site compare to other programs in the SEC? Thanks and keep it up. That's all, you know, highly confidential, I would say, Oz. It's like, you know, how many, you know, you don't walk into a business like, how many customers do you have? That I don't think that's stuff that anyone really shares. I think in general, though, you know, some of the bigger sites, like usually, you know who the bigger sites are, like Washington's big. UCLA, USC, like those are some of the bigger sites in the Pac-12, my understanding. And I think they compare fairly well to some of the other ones, but, like, you know, there's some huge sites out there. I think the biggest site in the, not just in our network, but in our industry is the Texags one, the Texas A&M one. It's just absolutely enormous. I think the biggest in our network, Dave, might be North Carolina or Alabama. I mean, there's some really big.
I know sites. It was North Carolina when it was Scout. I don't know with the merge what that ended up being, but North Carolina was always huge. And the interesting thing about North Carolina is you think, oh, basketball school. Even with North Carolina, football is a huge driver.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge driver of subscriptions. Just generally speaking, it's a more popular sport even at a basketball school.
It's crazy. And, but I, you know, I think the Pac-12 would probably be a little bit more, you know, like, you know, like if you compare up schools like the Vanderbilt site and like the Stanford site or the Cal site or something, the Vanderbilt site's probably going to have more subs. I don't know this for, you know, in general, but there's just, it's a little bit harder on the West Coast to do this. So I would say that the sites in general in the Pac-12 are probably smaller, but we have some bigger ones that can compare favorably with some of the other big ones out there, but certainly not the biggest in the country is going to reside in the Pac-12, and maybe towards the bottom of it, they might not be quite as big. But we have some. The good thing is we have some really great publishers up and down. So like Angie doing an amazing job at Oregon State, like she does really well there. I mean, that's why we ended up bringing her over from Rivals back in the day to scout, and then now it's 24/7. So I think you have some really good publishers out of Munster Tiger at programs that maybe you wouldn't think had have a lot of subs, but they do a really good job, so they get a good amount of subscriptions.
Yeah, I think that's all very true.
Yeah.
All right, we ready for Bruin Rick?
Yes.
He has a question about cutting the cord. Hi, guys. I've been listening from show one. Thank you, Rick. And have really enjoyed hearing the podcast develop into its current excellent state. Little touches like the sound bites Ryan does make it even better. Now might be a great time to play Champagne Larry one.
The truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
There we go. It's also been great following the both of you on Twitter and seeing your accounts blow up over the last few years. I have a question about, quote, cutting the cord. I remember Ryan announced he was doing this before last season, and I wanted to see how it went. How have you found that experience? Does the quality of watching football take a hit from relying on Wi-Fi for your feed? I was very excited to cut the cord myself as I pay for cable year-round for only sports purposes, but the options are confusing, i.e. which streaming service to use. I want all the network games, ESPN, Fox, and Pac-12 games. Another thing that I just can't get over is the inability to pause and rewind games. Is that really the case? How do you live without this? It's so great to be able to record the game and get home an hour later and watch it really fast by fast-forwarding through the commercials, saving time and missing none of the action. Action. Why did I say it like that? Missing none of the action. Just curious about your experience. Thanks for all you do.
Bruin Rick is from, like, Chicago or something, maybe? Is that...
I don't know. God, words are hard.
Personally, Rick, for me... it's been all right. Like, it's significant savings as far as money per month, but your experience isn't as good. I've run into a few problems. My wife complains all the time. We got through the live feeds are going to be 20 seconds or so behind if you were watching with cable, it might be even a little bit longer. So if you're trying to tweet, like, that's something you probably don't have to do, but if you're tweeting live or something during a game, there's some, significant obstacles, I guess, you'd have to overcome because you're going to be, behind what people, you're going to be behind what whoever's in the stadium, but then you're going to be behind like the regular TV audiences watching like on ESPN through cable or satellite. You're going to be behind them as well. So that's one of the things. For me, we have Hulu, which I like the lineup. It's basically like basic cable, but the interface is just god awful. There's no numbers anymore. So it's not like go to channel 200 and that's ESPN or whatever it is. It's just like a list in alphabetical order of these channels. So if you're up at the top and you want to go, I want to watch TBS, you got to like scroll all the way down to go find TBS. There's no like easy way to get there. And it's weird with sometimes you can fast forward through commercials. Sometimes you can't. Like that stuff's kind of confusing too. So I like Hulu's lineup for like what we want to see. They don't have Pac-12 Network, unfortunately, but you can watch old shows and stuff too. Watch different series, and I like that. But the interface is really kind of bad. And then I used to be able to watch it in my office too, but Hulu is really just, you can watch multiple screens, but it has to be in the same house. So I could watch like Hulu on a tablet in my office, but I can't put it on like a TV in my office. So there's definitely things you kind of have to get used to, but I'm probably saving more than $100 a month by doing it. So I think you kind of have to weigh what that is. I haven't tried some of the other ones. I've done Sling before and that was all right, but the interface is still a little weird.
Yeah, I would. So I recently cut the cord myself and I go with the Sling. The cool thing about Sling is that you can switch back and forth between the two different packages. I don't know if you've gotten into it yet, Rick, but you can switch between Sling Blue and Sling Orange with no penalty, and you can do it immediately mid-month. So you kind of can get both. The difference is I think it's one stream per account if you're only doing one of them. So that kind of makes it tricky if you've got multiple people watching at once. But that'll give you – and if you can do the combined. You can do Sling Blue and Orange, which is I think like – I don't know. What is it? Combined $40. And if you do that, you'll get ESPN, all the ESPNs, and with that, you can go through your Watch ESPN app and also get the ABC game, which you can do through your TV, depending on how robust your app selection is on your TV. But you can get Fox, you get the Fox channels, you get pretty much everything that's going to have a game, and then you can also get the Sports Extra, which will give you for $10 the Pac-12 network along with some other kind of regional networks. That's probably what I'm going to end up doing this season. And then there's going to be one-off situations, I'm sure, where I'll have to, I think CBS might not be on here at all. So for CBS games, I might have to watch that on my computer, because CBS, the main feed of CBS is free over, the CBS Sports website. But I think for the large part, I think Sling covers most of what you'll have to watch for the purposes of Pac-12 play. The one missing piece that I can see is I think CBS Sports Network isn't on there, and I don't think that's free over the internet from CBS. So that would be one where I think you might have to augment. I know CBS offers a free trial on their own weird little service. So if you needed to use that for like one game of a CBS Sports Network, you could do that. But the general thing is, it is more mixing and matching. And if you're trying to watch everything, it's going to be a lot more maybe making a plan for what you're going to watch versus what you're currently doing, which is flipping between channels on cable. It's possible to do it all, but you do have to kind of mix and match things. But what I would say is, if you're not watching much of anything in the off season, which for my purposes, I don't watch all that much TV. I'm watching like Netflix if I'm watching anything. I'm going to turn all this stuff off as soon as basketball season is over and then fire it up again in September.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's going to save me 4 or 5 months of paying anything. For you, it might be a different deal. Maybe you watch a lot of stuff that is, you know, broadcast live on network television. And in that case, this might not be a great fit for you. But if I'm only having to mix and match and find different services for essentially 5 months of the year, I'm fine with that. And I'll save the money on the other 4 or 5 months.
And I think the point that Dave brought up too, the local, if you like watching local channels, like we just kind of got used to it. Hulu has them. So I think they have everything in LA except Channel 5, which is KTLA. But you can get like Fox and NBC and ABC and CBS and the whatever, like, Channel 9, but you can't get Channel 5, Brew and Rick. So if you're in LA, but if you're on Sling, and I had that, like you would probably need to have an antenna to get the local stations too. So then you're switching between apps. So it's definitely a different experience. And I think you get so used to your channel guides and everything being in one place and all that stuff. And, you know, if it depends what you want to pay a premium for that, because that's kind of be what you're paying for. You can mix and match things like David's saying. It's just not going to be as easy to navigate through everything, but you'll be able to do almost the same things cheaper. But it's not all in one place a lot of times. But you people are used to it now. I think millennials for sure, you know, I'm going to watch this on Netflix or I'm going to watch this on Amazon or, you know, Hulu or whatever. So there's some mixing, matching, switching around. But the other aspect is the local channels, and some of the services will give it to you right there. So that's kind of nice where we can just have all that in one space, where when I had Sling before, if I wanted to watch ABC, I'd have to switch over the TV to the local antenna.
Right.
We got from Paul, I heard you enjoy graphs. He said, I thought I would start off with the most simple type of graph in existence, a pie graph, along with bright colors to keep Ryan entertained.
I love that I've become the more scientific and analytical among the two of us.
So Andrew would send us, you know, tweet one of 16 and everyone would have a graph and stuff. And he's like, I would expect you, Ryan, to be understand these. Like, yes, Andrew, if I gave a crap, I would sit down and figure out like, but you put all these charts with no explanations or no, you know, nothing. No words around it. No, I'm not gonna I don't care enough, and no one's paying me to do it. Like when I was an engineer, I would get paid to analyze that kind of stuff. I'm not getting paid, so I wouldn't do that. But that's we'll digress there. He said, after analyzing each Pac-12 podcast over the last year, I've compiled discussion topics into the chart below. No complaints about the less than 0.5% for Utah. I only listened for the Jake Browning jokes. Sorry to the North fans who didn't get a recruiting summary last week. wait, we had a recruit. We did the North.
We did.
Oh.
We did the previous week. Okay. I think Paul might have skipped that show. Whatever.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Roll with it.
So this is really hard to describe on the because this is an audio format, but he said topics of discussions by Pac-12 champions is very colorful pie chart. The biggest chunk looks to be USC, then UCLA, then Jake Browning's return, then Larry Scott, and then everything else.
Then Washington.
Washington State gets 4%. Arizona State gets 4%. Oregon got 5%, so they're a little bit bigger. Stanford 2%, Oregon State 1%, Utah 0%, basketball 2%. There's no way it's that high. Cal 2%.
Cal and Colorado each 2%. Yeah. Arizona 3%. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of 2 or 3%. USC got 20%, UCLA 17%. Jake Browning's returned was 16%. Larry Scott was 15%. So that's apparently what we talk about the most.
Yeah. That sounds right.
He said, love the podcast. Thanks for making the horrific Pac-12 bearable. Maybe you could have some fun with the always controversial Stanford marching band. Then there's a wiki link. I'm not going to read that. Okay. Question one. There's a lot to this email. For a vain 18-year-old kid who just wants to look slick for the ladies, what role do you believe flashy uniforms play in recruiting? For example, no offense, Dave, but although USC has a very classic look that instills nostalgia for those who remember their good years, their uniforms are, in my opinion, the ugliest in the conference.
Why would that offend me, Paul?
I don't think Paul's like he doesn't listen all the time. Well, the chart I think shows that he does. What extent do you feel that Oregon's very modern uniforms play in this year's outstanding recruiting class?
At least some amount. I mean, I think at least some. The hype from the Chip Kelly years and doing the whole uniforms deal, I think it's in part with that. I don't think it's like the last 3 years of their uniform changes, but what they were doing during that whole period, I think it built a mystique and a hype around Oregon that I think is playing into it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I think it depends on the recruit. I mean, every kid is different. There's going to be kids that love that, you know, and there's going to be kids that don't care about it. I mean, it depends what the prospect wants. And I think every school has a lot of positives and negatives, and you're trying to just emphasize what the positives are and, you know, give reasons why you could, you know, avoid or overlook some of the negatives. So it's just going to be one of those things that you can sell. You'll sell it to all the kids because the facilities are awesome. But it's not like it's going to be a lock. You know, you don't get every kid you want. It's not like it might be the best facilities in the country. It doesn't mean you're going to get everybody. It's just, it's a part of it. And it's going to be more important for some than others. Question two, as a Utah fan, is it bad of me to want either Washington or USC to roll through the Pac-12 like they should? I believe that the conference is only as good as its best team. Who's that? The 10-4 Huskies? Not good enough.
I would say it's like a two-part thing. If your team isn't good enough to do it, then yeah, it's fine to root for that. But if your team is even in the conversation, which I kind of think Utah was this past year, no. I mean, I would be rooting for Utah. But if you're like, I don't know, a fan of, say, a team that just went 3-9, like, yeah, whatever. Washington, go 12-0. Go wild. Yeah, I think that's fine.
I think you need to root for just not – like root for your team to beat whoever the power is, but not your couple other teams too. It's just everyone was losing. So, you know, if you lose, or maybe you beat Washington and they end up 11-1, like root for something like that. And they're still doing well, but it's just, there's too much, you know, everyone's mediocre and that's just not good enough. Paul from Utah, he says, PS, autocorrect just edited my horrific to horrific. So H-O-R, I'm sorry.
Two F's to one F.
Yeah, two F to one F. It's official. And they said, oops, horrific is a word, which I apparently misspell. Also, if you're curious, atrocious is too. However, their child, Herocious, is still not recognized by spell check. Write your congressman, right, Paul. We need to make that put in spell check.
It's important.
Thanks for the thanks for the chart. That was great. I'm going to put that on my fridge.
All right. So we got a nice long one to finish.
Oh, good. I'm glad you get this one.
Chris from Seoul. Thank you, Chris. Don't sing it. Don't sink into an offseason slump, boys. Super Bowl is past. National Signing Day limped off with a whimper. As listeners, we brave sometimes inattentiveness, lack of relevant facts, and as recently noted in someone's email, an almost even split between correct and incorrect facts. We listeners love your irreverence, creativity, and ability to pull together a pod during the dead of CFB winter. College football. Please don't catch the Pac-12 disease and slide into parody with podcasts on women's volleyball and men's water polo. That would be ferocious.
Ferocious.
I thought the three Washington players in the Super Bowl acquitted themselves very well. Sure, Littleton got beat by Gronk on a key play, but not because he had bad coverage, but because he was up against another Pac-12 alumni who made a great play. It was also good to see Danny Shelton make something of his snaps. He's had a tough time since leaving UW. Tough to watch Patrick Chung get hurt, though. Seeing the Pac-12 alumni perform well in the Super Bowl made me optimistic about the Pac-12 this coming football season. What say you? It had absolutely no impact on my optimism about the Pac-12 this upcoming season.
It was nice to see, you know, some Pac-12 names out there, but yeah, it was, I don't think that changes anything.
All right. And then on that theme, some easy, true or false. I love this. All right. You ready?
Yes.
Mario Cristobal proves to be the Kirby Smart of the Pac-12, great recruiter, struggles at key times with the coaching thing, and despite the talent, never wins a Pac-12 championship. I think Oregon would give their soul if he ends up the Kirby Smart of the Pac-12. You mean like flirting with the playoff each year that he's the coach?
But he's saying, but they don't win the Pac-12 championship.
Oh my God, they're in the conference without, I mean, it depends on what he means, like in terms of degree.
Yeah.
Like, does he mean literally what Kirby Smart is doing at Georgia or what that translates to in the Pac-12?
Right. Cause I mean, you would love to be Kirby Smart right now. You know, playoff appearances and things like that, but that's, I think I'm going to go false. I think Oregon's going to win a Pac-12 championship, but I think the jury's still going to be out on Cristobal. There was a little, you know, I have some concerns from, you know, what we saw last year, but given the benefit of the doubt, I think we'll see how he goes through this year. You got a, you know, stud quarterback. You got a lot of talent. Let's see what he does. If they struggle this year with the amount of talent they have on the team, then I think I'd agree with you there.
If I'm just taking his explainer as the main point, which is he proves to be a great recruiter and struggles the time of the coaching thing, I'm going to say true.
Okay.
Clay Helton defies all expectations and goes 10-3, wins the South and keeps his job. Lynn Swann becomes even more smug in his belief he is always right. Urban Meyer stays retired another year. False, true, false.
Okay. False, true. Yeah, I'm going to go agree with you. False, true, false. I think it's going to be really hard for USC to go 10-3. They didn't change enough. I think changing Graham Harrell will fix a lot of problems. If you add 10 points a game, you're going to win more games, but you might be giving up 7 more points a game or something. That would be bad. But
nothing can crack Lynn Swann's smugness.
That's true, 100%. And Urban Meyer.
I think Urban Meyer 2020.
Retirement. Yeah.
Yeah. Fake retirement. All right. Mike Leach lays an egg and Wazoo goes 5-7, misses a bowl, even though they do come close in the Apple Cup.
False. Yeah. I don't see that one.
David Shaw stubbornly stays smash mouth much too long in the season and Stanford finishes the year 8-5.
True.
Cal sets a conference record for fewest offensive points scored and still makes it into a bowl.
100% true. I don't know about that, but
spiritually true, literally false.
Okay, I like that.
Chip Kelly demonstrates he doesn't suffer the recruiting foolishness gladly, and UCLA becomes mired in good schemes, poor talent. True.
Yeah, I would go true with that. I've been on the Chip Kelly bandwagon from the beginning, saying I think it's going to be good, but this is just. And even like beginning of the year, David's like, there's some stuff that's not right. I'm like, no, let him do his thing. It's his, just let him do it. And then
is this the one time I'm right? Why? Why does this have to be?
I mean, I was the one that was saying, just let him do his thing. That's why you hired a guy like that. But now I'm like, why'd you hire a guy like that?
Why?
You know what the worst part is? It's like the USC fans that were telling me that Chip Kelly would have been a disaster at USC. And I was like, no, dude, you're an idiot. He'd be awesome. Now I think.
Well, that's
right.
The thing. The process was good. The actual result. Yeah, we'll see.
It's like you're a Michelin star chef and you're like, okay, you have, 6 months to go find all your ingredients for this amazing souffle or something. And you're like, I'll let my intern go and find some stuff at 7-Eleven. You know, it's like, it's tough. I don't know if that's a good analogy, but maybe.
No, it's not good. Utah finds it is really hard to repeat as South champion and finish tied for second.
Would I?
Sure. True.
But who's going to win? Like
Arizona or Arizona State?
Arizona State, maybe. Yeah. I might be back in Utah again, but. I'm going to say false.
Okay. One of the Arizona schools is surprisingly good, and the other is surprisingly bad. True.
So you think either one of them could win the South, but you think one of them will be bad?
I'm going to firm up my prediction right here. Okay. I think Arizona is going to be surprisingly good, and I think ASU, I don't think they're going to be bad, but I think they're going to be like a little bit surprisingly bad from people who thought they were like, going to surge because they did lose quite a bit last year.
I'm going to say false. I think they're going to both be like decent and maybe one of them can make a run, but I don't think one of them is going to be bad this year, which probably means both of them are going to be bad, but who knows?
Yeah, who knows? One of the conference 2018 doormats, Beavers or Buffaloes, becomes the Killer Bees and finishes bowl eligible. The other Bee repeats as doormat.
False. I think you're going to have two doormats, but doormats with promise.
I don't know where to go on Colorado if I think they can get back to bowl eligibility next year.
I think it's going to be tough with a new coach there. And I think Oregon State's a little too far away. I like the direction they're going. I think Colorado will go in the right direction, but I don't think either one of them is going to be able to be bowl eligible this year.
I'll go true and just say Colorado sneaks into a bowl.
Nice. First year Jacob, head coach.
Cool. Yeah. I like Mel Tucker. He seems to be doing the right stuff there. Jacob Eason starts slow but catches fire to win Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Year and goes higher in the pro draft than Justin Herbert.
False.
False.
Yeah, I think he could do the first part. I think Herbert, they just love him so much, he's going to be the first pick.
And I don't think Jacob Eason's going anywhere after sitting out for a year and then playing just one more year of football.
He has more eligibility, right? Like.
Yeah. I mean, I think he only played like a full one season at Georgia, right?
Yeah. So he should have a couple years. Okay.
Yeah. He should have, he played, all of 2016 and then threw seven balls in 2017. So he got the redshirt year then. And then he sat out this past year. So, I think he's probably at redshirt junior at this point, something like that.
Okay, yeah.
So he'll have 2 years. Pac-12 finishes the year with two teams ranked in the final AP top 10.
False
indeed. One Pac-12 head coach, OCDC, gets rated and becomes a P5 head coach.
All right. Who would be eligible for something like that?
So does that mean even a head coach? One Pac-12 head coach or an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator gets rated and becomes a P5 head coach?
Yeah. Okay, so it could be a head coach too. All right. Is there – okay, but who's – like who? What head coaches would get poached?
Not even just the head coaches, but you – Jim Leavitt. I mean, he could get
a Leavitt P5 could
job,
do it. Leavitt's the one that comes up. I mean, a Tim DeRuiter potentially from Cal. But like, someone's going to try to get Chris Peterson. He's not leaving. Like, will someone try to, I don't think like David Shaw is not going to go to another, like Mike Leach potentially could be poached away.
Yeah.
Especially if like Graham Harrell does, his offense looks good. And I don't know, someone in the SEC is like, we got to get Mike Leach, I don't know. But yeah, okay. We'll go true.
Cliff Kingsbury does the Steve Wilks and gets fired by the Arizona Cardinals after one season. Herm Edwards replaces him.
False.
You can't. False and false.
It's like if you fire a coach after 1 year, you can't like do it again like the next year. Like you're
just firing yourself at that point.
Yes, there's no reason. Chris in Seoul, we got the international questions. I love that.
Love that.
I think that's all we got, Dave.
That's all we got. That's every little bit of it.
So we squeezed
the juice out of this thing today.
So like hour and a half. And we read all the questions. Like people complained if we went like hour and 40 minutes and we didn't answer every single question. Like, what are you doing? You got more time. It's Saturday, everybody, too. We had things. It was a busy week kind of thing. So we're doing a show. We'll figure out what we're going to do next week. And what are we going to do? Like spring football stuff, Dave?
Yeah. Yeah. We got to start doing our roundups and previews. So we'll probably start with Arizona and just make sure talk about stuff that he hasn't seen yet. And then move on from there. I don't know. Maybe we kill some more time next week. We're going to have a substantive show. It'll be important, but maybe we kill a little bit more time before we start doing our spring stuff, because I think ASU will have still been the only one that started.
Yeah.
And then we can go on from there.
It might be cool to get some, get like Chris Cartman on and have him talk about what's been going on, things like that. Just get updates with the different teams. You know, depending on the week, we could do one or two each week, see what they can do. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Sounds beautiful.
Yeah, we'll be fine. You guys are awesome. We do appreciate all the feedback, all the reviews on iTunes and the tweets and everything. And when we don't put out a show, you're yelling at us and all that stuff. But it's a labor of love for us, and we do appreciate it. Please visit our sponsors. Thanks to Robinhood and Mint Mobile. Go check those out, like we said. That's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. Thank you for tuning in to the Podcast of Champions, and we will talk to you next time.